On my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, we're getting down to the truth behind the names that you know and love. Unfiltered conversations with legends like Leanne Morgan, Kathy Griffin, Ricky Lake. Find out when they feel the most on par. We're breaking it down with Don Lemon, Aaron Parnas, Lamonte Jones, laughing it up with Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, many more. You know, the results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.
Kale and Company, weekday mornings, 6 till 10.
855-839-1210 if you want to jump in. Cut Sheet, 745. Big guest at 930. Also, Athan Kutsarumbas from Real Clear Politics, PA, with some good data for us here with midterms. Before you know it, they'll be here, folks. It's going to creep up on us really quick. And he's got some good GOP stats for you that might make you feel a little bit better. He'll join us coming up around 9:10. Stocker, you got something? I thought maybe you were going to jump in for something here.
I was not.
Okay. All right, let's get to the news. Round number two at 7:04, we give you the great Dawn Stensland.
And good morning. This is Kale and Company News Live on this Thursday morning, April the 24th. We are heating up to 81 degrees in what will feel like a summer-like day. That is not great news for firefighters who have been battling these huge, massive, fast-moving wildfires engulfing a huge chunk, a section of New Jersey's Pine Barrens. This is Ocean County, New Jersey. They do expect that the fire will continue to spread, especially with today's heat and all the dry conditions. But they do point out that we've had no injuries. Nobody has been injured. Not all of the hundreds of firefighters who have been 24/7 around the clock trying to at least contain the fire. They have it 50% contained as of this morning, and we've been getting regular updates. But that New Jersey Forest Fire Service, they are saying that the fire has grown to well over 13,000 acres. So something like between maybe 13,250 acres and maybe a couple hundred added to that. So as we look at this, I will say that with the weather, we have windy conditions, dry conditions, hot, 81 degrees, but the wind will be blowing all that smoke, and that's a real issue for once evacuated residents. They're now allowed to go back into their homes, but that smoke is blowing toward New York, not in our direction, not toward Pennsylvania.
I was just going to ask if anybody in the this area, in the Philadelphia area, has seen any of the smoke.
Kind of. I have not noticed any of it. No.
Well, Dawn just reported that it's blowing the other way.
Yeah. Well.
So it's good news for us, bad news for them. It creates these incredible sunsets. If you've noticed, the sunsets have been spectacular because all of that pollution, the smoke and all of that just helps to create, unfortunately, it's kind of sick, I guess, to say, but it helps create beautiful sunsets.
And they haven't said how many houses have been destroyed. I know it's more forest-based, but, I've got to imagine there's some properties damaged, right?
I mean, they've said more than 1,000 structures threatened and still remain threatened.
Yeah.
So I saw them. They were creating lines, and they were spraying down, wetting down around the structures and the structures themselves and trying to divert, the fire to save the structures.
Yeah.
It's obviously not, you had asked a great question earlier, Nick, and that was, thinking about what happened in California. In California, you had the mountains, the hills, and a condensed area with neighborhoods and homes and that sort of thing.
Right.
This is mostly the Pine Barrens. They have maps online, but the firefighters are doing a good job. They did put out that warning yesterday, and I don't know if I reported it during Kale and Company News Live about the drones. It might have come right as we were getting off the air around 10 o'clock-ish, where they said the FAA came out, the feds, and said it's a federal crime. Do not fly your drone in the area where they're fighting these fires.
Yeah, I agree.
But how are we going to get the pictures then in the videos?
Because the problem is they have some of those drones are huge.
Yeah, right.
I mean, and we know that a goose can make a plane crash. So they have the planes that are being used, obviously, to help fight the fires.
Right.
The pilots have to stop. It's the protocol. They have to land. So you could face a federal felony.
Yeah. Or one of these drones if they hit one of the helicopters from one of the news outlets that are high above.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
By the way, not
drone people.
Not to make light of the wildfires, but like, aren't wildfires kind of part of nature? I mean, like, doesn't this happen? And isn't it? I don't want to say it's good for the forest, but like, it's part of the nature process, isn't it? Is it not?
It is.
Yeah.
But oftentimes they will do. It depends, and we learned this. We revisited this issue when we saw what happened in California. They used to deal with forest management very differently.
Yeah.
And it goes state by state.
Yeah.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
It has to do with management and also obviously the dry conditions we've had.
Yeah. You talk about the smoke, you know, coming this way. You know, we're almost 2 years removed from the Canadian wildfires. I think that was June of 2023.
Jeez. Yeah.
I'll never forget that. I mean, I literally couldn't breathe playing golf. Had to go home.
That's true.
Yeah.
We have a story. I know we've been covering this trial of 41-year-old Maurice Hill, charged with, among other things, multiple charges, but among other things, attempted murder, attempted homicide for allegedly shooting six Philadelphia police officers 6 years ago, summer of 2019. Those officers taking the witness stand and testifying about what they went through that day as prosecutors go to prove their case, as the defense attorneys for this guy try to poke holes in their stories and claim that, in fact, it's a self-defense type defense where he is saying that he thought that they were some kind of intruders, these six different officers, and that's why he fired upon them. It was a barricade situation for well over 8 hours, and it actually went into day two. In other words, it was a little over 8 hours, as I recall, but I think that it went overnight. So a tough case to prove, but we are continuing to follow that one. There's another story about a suburban man in Pennsylvania who has now been charged, and this was our AG, our Attorney General, Dave Sunday. He announced these charges against a man accused of creating thousands of these deep fake images of children being abused the sexual pleasure of the adults. What we used to call child porn, but we no longer call it that because it's not appropriate. But in this case, what's disturbing is that the man who's accused of this, 38-year-old Stephen Kamnick, is actually a Pennsylvania State Police corporal.
So he's creating fake images.
Allegedly.
Okay. But these are not authentic pictures that actually happened. He's just using technology
AI.
Today.
He's using AI, right?
Well, I guess it's better than the real thing, but so what a creep to do that.
This is why we can't have nice things. This is why we, because some creep, allegedly,
right.
There's, you know, innocent until proven guilty. But because people are like, hey, I wonder if we can do this with it. Like, oh my God.
Were these being circulated on social media?
Well, the weird thing about it is that he was, according to the authorities and the charges that have been filed, he was using, for example, mugshots of perps, driver's license photos, even his own coworkers and women he met on the job, and taking his own, you know, recordings of these individuals, taking their face, their head, and then putting on the body of somebody else, in some cases, the body of a child.
Oh, God.
How does that thought process even begin to matriculate through the brain, through the fingertips, to your keyboard? I don't know, mental health crisis?
Yeah, I don't
Disgusting?
Know.
Disgusting? Perverted?
So, you know, Dave Sunday, the quote from the attorney general here in Pennsylvania, he said this defendant swore an oath to protect and serve the people of the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
He was entrusted with resources to uphold that oath. And instead, he used his power. This is continuing the quote, used his power and the trust placed in him to prey on innocent, unsuspecting coworkers and create sexually abusive material, some involving depictions of children.
Mm-hmm. Good God.
I'm telling you, and I know everybody's going to come down. Oh, this is disgusting. This is what happens with the AI. And this was my argument a year ago on this show. You're going to end up having all of this absurd stuff. And you know who actually likes a lot of this? Now, not with this stuff, with child pornography. But you know who likes not being able to figure out what's real and what's not online? Politicians. They love it because now you have no idea what's authentic and what's fake.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, that's a good, very good point. Well, in this case, I don't know that the Pennsylvania State Police Corporal, I don't know that he has an attorney yet. I suspect that perhaps one of the things we're hearing is, you know, was this guy trying to do a prank? Was he trying to do something that was, you know, he thought was funny? I have no idea. I mean, but obviously Dave Sunday, the AG, isn't laughing. Nobody's laughing about it, and especially the coworkers when they saw this,
yeah,
as you can only imagine. So we have that going on. And you know what? A
funny prank would be putting Greg Stocker's head on Dawn Stensland's body or
right.
Nick Hale's head
funny.
On.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Kevin Pools will have that done in about 7 minutes.
when you involve children and the abuse of children, in my opinion, you're a sick individual and it's not a prank.
Firing squad?
If found guilty? Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
You're creating a heck of a list of people you need to take out.
I want everybody deported.
Or dead.
Firing squad. Like, yes, yes. The world would be a better place if I ran it.
Yeah. Look.
I know that we've talked this week a lot, and Nick had a big take, and speaking about what's going on in the Supreme Court, hearing arguments in that Montgomery County, Maryland case with a group of parents of all different religions and backgrounds fighting for parental rights against certain indoctrination type material. But I'll take you locally. The Radnor School Board has just voted to restore some what they say are banned books to their school library. The books return genderqueer blankets and fun home. To the Radnor High School Library.
It's high school, though. So
it is high school.
It's different than elementary schools.
Yeah.
So in high school, you can, you know,
agree. I agree with you on that one. But the committee had decided that the books were not age appropriate, and so now this is a reversal locally. So they removed them in February, and now they had many in the community saying, just return them. It's what you just said. High school board voted 6-0 with 3 members abstaining to return these books to the high school library. To my knowledge, this has nothing to do with middle school, grade school, nothing like that. So we'll talk about that moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the forecast. 81 degrees for us today, bright sunny skies. And we're looking at a little chance for rain this evening. God knows we need the rain as far as for any planting you've done, and certainly for those firefighters in New Jersey. And also, it was in the Jim Thorpe area. That's what I reported on yesterday. So some different wildfires popping up. Tomorrow, though, for your Friday, a little bit cooler, but still a beautiful day. Unfortunately, just in time for Saturday. That's when it rains all day, and it'll be 72 degrees.
By the way, Moxie Floxen asks if I have road rage when I drive. No, I do not.
No, I've been with you in the vehicle multiple times. You're pretty stable.
Other than on the radio, I'm actually a very calm and collect human.
Right. You have radio rage.
I have radio rage.
Yeah.
Radio rage.
Moxie Floxen. That sounds like a prescription.
It's amazing. It's an amazing handle.
Moxie Floxen?
By the way, Moxie.
You should take some of that.
By the way, Moxie, I'm calling you out. You call me out. I'm going to call you out.
Yeah.
Politics and Pints, 1210WPHT.com.
Yeah, Moxie.
Buy your ticks right now.
Yeah.
1210WPHT.com. Buy the ticks right now for May 6th. Thank you.
Draft day. Eagles and Penn relays beginning at 9:00 this morning. Just remember that will affect some traffic. So heads up on that one. Kale and Company News Live.
All right, Dawn, thank you very much. Coming up next, we're going to give you the updates on Kilmar Abrego Garcia, as well as one of the employees of Tim Walz in the state of Minnesota, who decided to vandalize, count it, 6 Teslas. And the fact that they will not face any charges. We'll get to those 2 stories as we continue. It's Kale and Company, but first a word from our friends at the Piazza Auto Group. And we're talking about Piazza Acura, where they have the beautiful all-new 2025 ADX SUV. It is Acura's latest addition to their precision-crafted lineup. This premium compact SUV is a breakthrough in design, performance, and innovation. With a turbocharged engine, available all-wheel drive system, and cutting-edge technology, the Acura ADX is engineered for those out there who demand more. And best of all, it is now available at all 3 locations for Piazza. That's Piazza Acura of Ardmore, Piazza Acura of Reading, and their location in Westchester, with leases, get this, as low as $389 per month. Check it out online, PiazzaAcura.com.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Kale and Company on demand from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Democrats' new champion, right? The hero that is deported Maryland man who was actually now pulled over driving a car belonging to a human smuggler. That is correct. This story just continues to add new details every single day as DHS sources have now confirmed that Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the champion of the left, was pulled over driving an SUV belonging to a confessed human smuggler and a fellow illegal alien in Jose Ramon Hernandez Reyes. So I wanted to just give some of these details here. This coming out yesterday, and this is from Fox News. The so-called deported Maryland man, Kilmar Abrego Garcia, whom Democrats have been demanding the Trump administration return to the U.S., was previously pulled over. Now, we gave you this angle, the basic angle that the Tennessee Star reported last week, and he was let go by the FBI and the Biden DOJ, but he was pulled over by a highway patrol officer, and now the new details are that he was driving a car belonging to a confessed human smuggler. Multiple sources in DHS have confirmed to Fox News. The sources confirmed documents reported by Just the News, which is an outlet publication out there, that revealed Abrego Garcia was pulled over driving an SUV belonging to Jose Ramon Hernandez Reyes, another illegal alien, who in 2020 confessed to human smuggling across the U.S.-Mexico border. As previously reported by Fox, Abrego Garcia, the 29-year-old illegal alien whom the Trump administration recently deported back to El Salvador, was pulled over on December 1st, 2022 by a Tennessee Highway Patrol trooper who stopped him after he was, quote, observed speeding and unable to stay in his lane. Now, the trooper noticed, and these are some of the new details, eight individuals in the car with Abrego Garcia, who said he began driving 3 days prior from Houston, Texas, to Temple Hills, Maryland, via St. Louis, Missouri, to, quote, perform construction work. The report on the stop states that the trooper suspected it was a human trafficking incident, as there was no luggage in the vehicle. Additionally, the individuals in the car reportedly gave the same address as Abrego Garcia's home address. And when speaking with the trooper, Abrego Garcia allegedly, quote, pretended to speak less English than he was capable of and attempted to put encountering officers off track by responding to questions with questions. After the incident, the officer decided not to give Abrego Garcia a citation for the driving infractions, but rather give him a warning for driving with an expired license. Now, new documents further reveal that Abrego Garcia was driving a 2001 Chevrolet Suburban that he said belonged to his, quote, boss. The Suburban was identified by DHS as belonging to Hernandez Reyes, who pleaded guilty to human smuggling after being caught in a Mississippi in a car with passengers from Mexico, El Salvador, and Honduras. According to another document also confirmed by DHS sources, the Homeland Security Investigation's Baltimore field office further flagged the vehicle being driven by Abrego Garcia as belonging to a target they suspected of another human trafficking or smuggling ring. The office said that the vehicle is used by HSI Baltimore agent in human smuggling traffic operation, vehicle making trips to southern border to pick up non-citizens. This is the guy. This is the character that the Democrats are riding or dying with when it comes to Trump and illegal immigration, deportations, and our now solved border crisis. You can look at that. J.D. Vance had a great quote yesterday talking about all of the lawfare, all of these district judges. It's bad enough that we have these Democrats from Florida and other states, Maryland, that are heading to El Salvador and taking these out-of-country road trips, so to speak. But then you have these district judges that are just a thorn in everybody's ass. And I don't know how you as an American citizen could not possibly be bothered by district judges that are, I don't want to say activists, but if they are basically trying to prevent and muddy up the process of deportation, think about what the Biden administration was really trying to achieve here. 15, 20 million, 10 million, whatever the number might actually be, they were importing new voters to turn all swing states blue. And in the process, if any of these individuals are caught and apprehended, the court process itself, which is just voluminous and makes your head want to explode, that's why so many courts have log jams of caseload after caseload. You can't even get to half of these cases. That's why you get arrested and you're not in court for 5 years these days. And all they want to do is grind it down to a screeching halt. So I asked the question then, Dawn, how can Trump and this administration deport any of these individuals if every district judge that is left of center is going to just tie this up in litigation, which means then we get the appellate courts involved, and then if it's big enough and deemed worthy enough, SCOTUS will look at it, and all they do is create a logjam here. It's going to take the rest of my lifetime to deport these people at this rate.
Well, I think that's why it was critical that these individuals were processed through, most of them through Louisiana, a friendly state to the administration, and then deported in the middle of the night, basically. And so I think that's why they expedited everything.
Yeah.
Because what they can say now is, hey, these are individuals who are not U.S. citizens. They're in their home country, and we don't have jurisdiction over the, you know, government in El Salvador. So we can provide the information we have.
Yeah.
And they can decide to let him out of prison,
right,
to facilitate his freedom. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But in the court records, I mean, you're just citing all of these court records that date back to 2019, 2022, and a good percentage of the individuals in that vehicle that you mentioned, it was determined through all the investigation. I mean, there are massive, you know, there are all these court records. This is public record.
Right.
Anybody can look this up.
Sure.
It's all public.
Yep.
They were being human trafficked. That was the determination. My mm-hmm. question is on this. He's a union member, and we've heard his wife, who's an American born, you know, a U.S. citizen, say, oh, he's a hardworking construction worker. He's a union man. And so my question on this is, you know, usually these union jobs are tough to, they're coveted.
Pretty well vetted too, right?
Yeah. Well, and they're coveted.
How do you gain union status when you're illegal?
Yeah. So what's going on here? And I just think of, you know, 'cause he's Maryland. Remember the big bridge collapse?
Yeah.
And the hardworking guys who were working the overnight shift that nobody wanted, it was determined that they were, in fact, the gentlemen who were killed.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, they were, it was determined they were here illegally.
Right.
And we never heard any investigation. We never got to the bottom of that. They were, obviously, they were taken care of. There was that commitment. But I just wonder, you know, are they bringing in, or are they purposely hiring people who want those overnight shifts,
yep,
rather than deal with, I don't know, complaining citizens?
Get, right.
But these are high paid, very, you know, high quality union jobs.
Yeah, I agree. And look, I'm all for checks and balances between the executive, judicial, and legislative branches, but it just seems like every judge under the sun is just trying to provide resistance to what the American people voted for and overwhelmingly agree with. Mm-hmm. And they're giving Trump the praise for the majority. And it's well over, yep, I think it's well over 58% was the last number I saw from our boy Harry Anton with some of the data that they all support. 6 out of 10 Americans support what Trump's doing when it comes to the deportation efforts. Speaking of that, let's go to Tony in Pottstown. This is our boy, Tony. Tony, hola, amigo.
¿Cómo están, muchachos? Buenos días.
Yeah, bien, y tú?
Bien, bien. Oh, I guess I can continue in Spanish then. I go Spanish.
That's where I draw the line, Tony. That's all I got.
Right. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, sir.
Oh, my God, it's been a long time.
Yep.
I'm working now, so I got less chance to call you guys.
Good for you.
So I think that my paisano from Maryland, I think he's guilty for the simple reason that if he was innocent, as everybody was saying over here and over there, you know, with the senators or whoever is going over there, Bukele would have released it by now. Simple as that.
Yeah, true. But the argument now, Tony, from the Democrats is that his due process was violated.
What due process? From the moment you came here illegally, you lose everything. There is no due process. And besides, he's associated with MS. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that is that.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? They're going to bring him back and then deport it again? Is that what's going to happen?
Well, that's my argument, is once Trump deemed MS-13 and Tren de Aragua as terrorist organizations, he had to get the heck out of this country. And it's been pretty well documented. I think it's two judges, right, multiple law enforcement agencies, and a sheriff have said, there's no doubt about it, this guy's MS-13.
Right. And also the last thing that you were just talking about, like he being in a car with a whole bunch of people, that sounds exactly like human smuggling to me.
Right. Eight people.
I'm telling you because I was there. I was there and, you know, I was smuggled. You know what I mean?
Right.
I know how that goes. Also, I think he has crimes to pay in El Salvador. So that's that as well.
Well, and then also, one of the claims, I think, from his attorney or maybe even Garcia himself was gang retaliation. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. If you're not in MS-13, then why are you worried about a gang, a rival gang, retaliating against you if you're not affiliated with any gang?
Right, right. Well, he said it himself. A rival gang was trying to kill him because of his mom pupusa shop that he was whatever the whole story which is a lie because they say that the pupusa shop is being closed for like 4 years now, and then MS or 18 gang in El Salvador has been in jail for the past 2 years. So what is he talking about?
So what is that shop called, a pupusa shop?
It's pupusa is the national food of El Salvador, which you guys need to try.
What is pupusa?
Pupusa is like a tortilla, but it's a little thicker, filled with cheese. You can put any type of meat in there. You can put beans in there. Oh, yeah. My God, you need to try it. When you go and get it, make sure you get revueltas, which means you get all the ingredients mixed on one.
Okay. Tony, we're going to have to come out to your house and do a remote for breakfast.
It comes with pickled cabbage. Delicious.
Pickled cabbage. Don't sleep on pickled cabbage.
No, pickled cabbage is great. Tony, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Tony.
Yeah. All right. There he is.
Kind of looks like potato pancakes. Just the image. Kind of looks like pancakes.
Yeah. Sound like they're high in carbs. I'll have to wait till I trim some LBs before I go back to that.
LBs.
But it's cornmeal, I think.
Oh, okay.
Or rice flour. Yeah. So it's also high in protein.
Yeah. You ever have empanadas?
Yes,
of course.
Oh, yeah, yum. Tremendous.
There was a place that had great empanadas right around the corner from where Donna and I used to work.
Yeah.
Down there on 4th and Market, 5th and Market, whatever it was.
Oh.
We need more Cuban food, though. Like, authentic Cuban food is my favorite. My favorite food in the whole world.
Really?
Yeah.
Cuban food over anything.
Over anything.
Wow. Over every nation.
Yep.
Over Italian.
Even over Italian. Italian's number two. But Cuban, it's really hard. I mean, unless, like, when I go to Florida to see friends, we go to Cuban every night. But in this area, there aren't that, I can't really find an authentic, not, you know, there are some.
And you're not talking about, like, the Cuban sandwich, the Cuban, right?
Well, there's the Americanized version, but I'm talking about, like, the authentic Cuban food. It's the best. Yeah. It's delicious.
Because I've always liked the Cuban over the Reuben. I think the Reuben is an overrated sandwich.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a big Reuben guy.
No.
I mean, I like
Reuben
it.
Is a good, I just, it's a good sandwich.
Yeah, I mean, it's solid. I'll go Cuban over Reuben.
Yeah.
But then again, I think the gyro is the ultimate sandwich.
Roast beef?
Oh, I love roast beef. Yeah.
Is it gyro?
Well, yeah. Technically, I think the Greeks call it a gyro. Yeah. The Metagons call it gyro.
You're making me hungry.
I know. I'm hungry right now. 855-839-1210. Last quick update before we get to the cut sheet. The individual that was charged with not one, not two, not three, four, five, but six different Tesla vandalism charges with six different vehicles. For those that weren't tracking this story, Minnesota state employee has now avoided criminal charges after vandalizing at least six Tesla vehicles because the local district attorney decided to send him into a diversion program over charges against a Minnesota Department of Human Services data analyst, Dylan Brian Adams, after he caused $20,000 in damages. Now, the interesting note here is that the county attorney is Mary Moriarty, who is funded by George Soros. So the connection here, the consistency, the one thing you can say is, oh, surprise, surprise, a Soros-funded district attorney fails to provide charges. And apparently it falls on biracial lines. They won't charge a black individual. They won't charge a white individual. But if you're Tim Walz, how do you allow this to slide? If you think you have any future left in politics, right? Which I don't think he does. Mr. Potato Head himself, Stretch Armstrong. You're going to have one of your employees in your state. You're the CEO, basically, of the state of Minnesota. And you have a person in Health and Human Services, or Human Services, I should say, that does this to six different Teslas. And gets off with a diversion program like he's 16, like he was, stalker in a Wind Gap alleyway, spray painting a garage. we'll do a little community service at the rec center, and if you're good when you're 18, we'll expunge your record. That's what we're doing now for Tesla vandalism. Now, this was not a Molotov cocktail, so it didn't, rise to that level, but these were the keyings. I think there was a tire slashing and a couple of other instances where the vehicles were destroyed and damaged. And this individual gets off the hook. I'm so tired of the lawlessness and the lack of accountability in this country with all of these DAs. You talked about it earlier about Krasner and Brandon Johnson and all these individuals with super low approval ratings. Maybe that is the biggest case study of all that needs to be done. Yeah. I think it was Stalker that you brought it up. Where is this disconnect where every time there's a poll, these people are trending like 28%, 12%, 36%. Yet they continue to get reelected. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be a Republican that replaces them. How is a more law and order Democrat not available out there willing to run and defeat these people that are anti-defending and prosecuting the victims in society? They all operate like defense attorneys. And I understand that Krasner used to be a defense attorney, but when you switch tables and go to the other side of the court, you need to have a zest for law and order.
Yeah, zest for law and order.
Yes.
I like that. By the way, a little cut sheet hors d'oeuvre here. Tim Walz gave his State of the State address yesterday in Minnesota. And he started talking about, he started attacking Trump for deporting illegal immigrants, saying university students being swept up, shoved into unmarked vans, and fathers being tossed in Salvadorian gulags.
Oh, the gulag.
Without a hint of due process, he was actually booed. Roll this.
University students being swept up, shoved into unmarked vans, and fathers being tossed into Salvadorian gulags without a hint of due process.
Where are the arms going?
Wow.
Yeah. Not a popular figure.
Were they booing him or were they booing what he was saying?
Yeah, were they saying, oh.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a fair question.
That might be a mislabeled, and I don't mean by our staff here. I mean on Twitter, that might be a mislabeled fake news thing because they may have been just been like, oh, the due process. Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
Well, as you said yesterday, I think most people are completely oblivious to the story in general.
Oblivious.
Which is remarkable.
I was out and about around the Easter holiday. Nobody was discussing this. I know it's hard to imagine because it's kind of like everything we've been discussing in cable news and everything.
Right.
But like nobody knows the story. But like, oh yeah, that's like a, you know what I mean? Think about that that numbnuts who went out and went out on the street and asked all those people in Maryland. They had no idea about the story.
Oh, Johnny.
I like Johnny.
I like Johnny. Him. He's wonderful.
On Jesse Waters' show. Okay. He's good.
He'll be the 7 p.m. host in 2047. Yeah.
That's how Jesse got to start.
He was Bill O'Reilly's guy.
Bill O'Reilly's guy.
Don't you guys get like nuts? What living and breathing this stuff 24 hours a day?
No,
I just know my stuff.
Oh God,
we watch all of it. By the way, speaking of that, CNN as we were talking about Garcia, yeah. They had an update. They were talking about it, and they're calling him deported dad.
Deported dad.
So it's not the Maryland father. It's deported, wrongly deported dad.
Hashtag double D. Jose Cruz checks in on Twitter. He says, El Roble in Reading. Dude, them pupusas kill.
Oh,
we have to take a Reading road trip here on Kalen Company.
Yeah.
All right. Coming up next, it's time for a Thursday edition of What's on the Cut Sheet. And we'll get, trust me, we're going to get to Pete Hegseth in Makeup Studio. I haven't forgotten about old Petey Boy. And we'll get to that coming up in a little bit. But the Cut Sheet is next here on Kalen Company.
Dawn, you have a natural lawn.
Yeah, we got to talk about the lawn. Because it's looking good, thanks to my friends at Natural Lawn of America. We love Natural Lawn of America, and you will too. This is my lawn care company. We did our homework, and they're local, family-owned and operated. They're fantastic, and they're going to cater the services. It's very personalized, so they do an analysis of your lawn, what it needs, and that's why this is so successful. At Natural Lawn, they truly believe in growing greener, healthier lawns without all those harsh chemicals. That use environmentally friendly products that keep your lawn, yes, lush and green while protecting the safety of your family, your pets, your kids. From organic fertilizer to safer weed and insect controls, they're going to make sure your lawn thrives naturally, season after season. Schedule Natural Lawn's full service program. That's what I've had for years. You get free seeding every year. So they do the seeding, obviously, in the fall. So if you want that greener, healthier lawn plus the free seeding, call Natural Lawn now. 800-FREE-SEED. 800-FREE-SEED. Your lawn deserves the best. Call the best. Choose My Lawn Care Company. The locally owned, yes, family operated Natural Lawn of America. Greener grass, fewer weeds, guaranteed. Tell Dawn sent you.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Kale and Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD and on the free Odyssey app.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5 wherever you get your shows.
Let's find out what is on that cut sheet for a Thursday, shall we?
What? On the cut sheet.
What's on the cut sheet on this Thursday? Sponsored by Rita's Italian Ice. Your favorite soda just got a cool new twist. By the way, I tried this. It is amazing. The cola Italian Ice. Get it with a little bit of cherry. Oh, so good. Yeah. It tastes like a cherry Coke.
Oh yeah.
Especially today, 81
like,
degrees.
Yeah, like a frozen cherry Coke.
Uh huh.
New cola ice is now at Rita's. Try the new Twisted Cola Blender drink topped with cocoa lime cream or dig into the cola gelati. Stop by Rita's and grab cola treats before they are gone. Mm-hmm. Be cool, eat that Rita's. Be cool, eat that Rita's.
Every day it's sunny out. My daughters are like, can we go to Rita's? Can we go to Kiwi? Can we go to this ice cream shop? Can we go to this place?
Speaking of your daughters.
Aww.
Oh, God, yeah.
Thank you for that.
What a moment this was last night.
So cute.
Roll this.
So, today, I was getting ready for school, and then all of a sudden I hear, what's on the cut sheet? What's on the cut sheet on this Wednesday morning?
Wednesday!
She's even imitating Greg Stocker.
I know.
Mia, what a cutie.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mia. About a year ago, Olivia did the what's on the cut sheet impression, and now Mia did it because... Well, I guess my wife is playing What's on the Cut Sheet on the big screen or something in the morning when they pull up the YouTube as
so I have to be
getting
careful.
Ready for school.
Yes. We have to be careful what we say. And then,
am I indoctrinating my children? 855-839.
All right. Michelle Obama did her podcast thing, by the way, which is not doing well. I've heard. I know you're shocked by this, but...
It's kind of negative energy, isn't it?
Well, according to her, Dawn Stensland, I'm glad you said that, she's talking about how, as a black female, okay. she is not allowed to articulate their pain as a black female because nobody ever gave them permission to do that.
Oh, okay. So that's the reason why the podcast is failing.
Wasn't her whole thing when Trump was elected like the pain and suffering that's going to happen if the Trump
Okay. Was this the first time around in 16 or this time around?
I think both, actually.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, she never attended the inauguration, so who knows?
Roll Michelle.
We don't articulate as black women our pain because it's almost like nobody ever gave us permission to do that.
Mm. And does anyone care?
Yeah, there's no they care.
I think we would care.
There's Craig.
If we knew.
Mm-hmm.
If we knew.
Or, you know, and we have to ask ourselves, the men in our lives is, why wait to be asked? Mm-hmm. It seems like what we go through is pretty obvious. I mean, maybe we're not complaining, but we're actually living life out loud, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the critique as to why her podcast is not doing as well.
No. That had nothing to do with it. She's just making a statement about black females not expressing their pain because they're not allowed to.
But then here's the thing. But she doesn't go through the racial angle of it, where she pivots, and that's telling to me, is that she's saying something about, she points to men, obviously not her brother, who she adores.
Craig.
Yeah.
But she says, well, the men in our lives, they don't allow us. So is there something else going on here?
I don't know.
I mean, was she controlled and constricted by Barack?
I don't know.
By her father? Does she have daddy issues?
I don't think so. Adored her. She just lost her mom. I know she lost her mom. They were very close. And so I have a lot of empathy for that. But so did Melania Trump lose her mom, as we know.
I don't know. Michelle Obama's pretty much had a big platform for almost 20 years now. I think she can express whatever pain she wants. The only question is, does anybody care? Does anybody want to listen to it?
I think it's a different message and I'm surprised because she was always, even when she spoke at the DNC and they said, Michelle was the biggest star, sort of stole the whole show at the DNC. But you think about it, she was always funny. That's what we thought in the speeches. She was empowering. She was positive energy. This is a completely different Michelle Obama that I've ever seen before. And I just think it's, not for nothing, but I mean, you call me Donnie Downer when I'm doing the 6 a.m. news and it's all murder and mayhem, nobody really wants all down stuff.
I think we're numb to negativity. I think we're tired of victimhood and bad news. I actually think as miserable as society is, we are looking for the bright side.
Yes.
Right? In today's world of, my God, everything is available at my fingertips, I think outrage culture, it certainly still exists, especially on social media, but you have so many options that if you hear something that just doesn't, you don't want to bring you down or, oh, here we go again with this, you're out, right? Yeah. Like, you're on to something new. You're on to something else.
She also said, this is three, she rips the notion that black women are angry before she admits that she's angrier than her white friends. Literally, in the next sentence, she says, I hate this notion that all black women are angry. Now, I am more angry than my white counterparts, basically what she's saying.
She's proving her point. Roll
it.
Proving the point.
First label they put on us as black women is that we are angry.
Mm-hmm.
The irony is like, I am probably less light than many of my white female friends.
Mm-hmm. Less light.
I see
less,
that.
Less light.
Less light. Light.
Mm-hmm. Not
you know?
Light. Light.
Light. Mm-hmm. L-I-G-H-T. Because I say this a lot. I mean, I see the difference in some of my white female friends. I see a lightness,
mm-hmm.
an ability to be in the world and see what's going on, but still be not as burdened about it as I think I am.
Unburdened.
By the way, first of all, there's 0.1% of the country that is as privileged as the Obamas are.
I know.
So they literally live the American dream.
Oh my God.
Literally live the American dream. And they're still bitching.
Yes.
Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, Barack, this is like
Barack's not bitching.
Well,
I guess not.
Like, yeah. I don't know where he is. He's not here with her at the table with Greg.
This podcast.
Maybe that's part of the reason she's angry. Greg. I don't know.
It seems like an airing of the grievances.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that people really are interested in consuming that. And
Barack's out like...
No, I was just going to say, I don't even know that black women are listening to this.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Right? And that's who she's trying to cater to.
Yeah. Yeah, because all women are going, dang, Michelle, I want your life and your money and your homes and the home in the Hampton and your beautiful daughters.
Martha's
and
Vineyard. Yeah.
Your gorgeous husband with his nice body on the jet ski. I mean, I just think Barack's out there having fun. And I don't know. Most women I know who are that angry woman has nothing to do with ethnicity, has to do with their husband.
Yeah.
And they're not happy with their husband or his activities or his lack of attention on them or whatever. And so that's like my...
Sorry.
I'm just saying.
Something caught in my throat.
You never want to be that angry woman, but it has nothing to do, in my opinion, she's not... This is not about race. This is about the marriage. And I think...
She's projecting.
I think she is. Doesn't she talk about couples therapy, that she's been in couples therapy?
Yeah.
And,
It also makes me wonder if she really would have had a shot. Remember when I was saying that if she decided to be the nominee and she decided to run, that she would have won. I thought, and I've said that many times on this show. The more I consume her podcast and also realize how it's not being, consumed by the masses, same result. You could insert Kamala or Michelle Obama, same result.
Yeah.
Contrast her message, and that's a legitimate thing to talk about, light skin and, what they say high yella, and that whole history and books have been written about this, and that's an interesting thing to study. But just contrast this with somebody like Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah.
Oprah Winfrey, the way that she became famous, she was, I've studied her, read all the books about her, but she was an anchor woman in the South. And a news director told her, a white news director who's an idiot, who nobody knows who that guy is, said, look, you're too dark skinned and you're too fat. You'll never be successful. That's what he told her. This is a woman who, her name is Orpah, which is a Bible name in the book of Ruth. And they called her Oprah. They mispronounced her name.
Is that true?
Oh, yeah.
Orpah.
And she went with it. She went with Oprah. That's why nobody else is named Oprah.
Yeah, she looks like an Orpah.
No, but I mean...
I harpooned an Orpah out at sea.
But her original, her hit and all those people who were wise to invest in her and believed in her, and I know some of them, she was all about overcoming and triumph and celebrating people who are survivors. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, you don't see many fat people on TV, to be honest.
It's true.
Right?
It's absolutely true.
Especially not women.
Yeah. Well, by the way, her point about everybody thinks that black women are angry, I don't know. All I've been hearing for the last 10 years is about the young white male rage. You know what I mean? And it started with my generations with Woodstock 99.
Yeah.
Remember, I always come back to that because there was a documentary on HBO about it, because they tried to tie in, because I was 19 or 20 at that time, and people are trying to tie in, or at least HBO was, that same group that went to Woodstock 99, which was my generation, is now in their 40s. Or 50s, and they're voting for Trump, and it's the white male rage that was seated at that concert in 1999.
Was that Limp Bizkit era? Fred Durst.
Yeah, it was Limp Bizkit. It was Korn. It was Metallica. Yeah. The Chili Peppers.
Yep.
I didn't even go to it, by the way. But all I'm hearing, my point is that all I'm hearing is about the young white male rage and everything. So I don't know why everybody has to feel the need to put race into everything.
Oh, of course.
You know what I mean?
It's the obsession over identity politics. And I'm telling you, most Americans tune it out.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear it. They don't want to consume it. They don't even acknowledge it. And they don't go about their daily life wondering if that's a very, very dark black female or a lighter skinned black female or
a
white
thing.
Chick.
That's a I disagree.
What, to what, 1% of society?
I think it's a thing. The problem, as you pointed out, is that it's somebody who's extremely wealthy and is more privileged and
than anybody.
Than like, anybody we know.
Yeah, and how much is she getting for this doozy of a podcast, by the way?
Millions.
Oh, yeah.
She's getting millions,
to suck.
For it. Yes. She's so getting
spare me your privilege.
That's what all the podcasts companies do. We were guilty of it here too at Odyssey, and all the other podcast companies are, because there's only a very few select podcasts that make money.
Yes.
But they seem to, you know, have $100 million for every Tom, Dick, and Harry.
Yep.
Hey, you have a following. Come to a podcast that bombs.
Yep.
So, yeah, no, of course she got those. Yeah, she got millions of dollars to do this podcast to suck. Speaking of sucking, Pete Buttigieg was on with Andrew Schultz. I just mean like this appearance. On Andrew Schultz has sucked. He was talking about him and his husband adopted twins, right?
Yes.
African American twins, black twins. On this podcast, he's talking about how he got a discount for adopting black kids.
Oh my God. By the way, where do you see Pete here? He's got the goatee going. He's going for that new edgy, dark, woke look.
Yeah. I mean, I give him credit for going on, you know, like opposing, you know, Andrew Schultz. I'm sure is not the biggest Pete Buttigieg fan.
Right.
So I give him credit for going on these podcasts and talking like a human. But the choice of words here is a little suspect.
Roll. Okay.
Have you thought about, like, when your son gets older, his experience in the world, probably different from yours, like, how would you have those combos with him? Or even, let's say, your daughter, like, learning to deal with her hair, it's going to be a little difficult. Like, how have you thought about these things? Yeah. Do they concern you?
Yeah, we think about it all the time, and it's not like we have it all figured out. So we were in...
knows how important identity is.
Yeah,
you know.
Mm-hmm. Of course. So we were in what's called a surprise adoption scenario. So I was at work, I was traveling. We got a phone call. Chasten called me, and the next day we were in a rural Midwestern hospital holding him in our arms, and they were one day old. Wow. Like it was like that, like just from like normal life to like. And by the way, it's twins, which was amazing.
You didn't know it was twins.
We were just on a list. You know, we said that we were willing to adopt, or we wanted to adopt. We said that we wanted to adopt without regard for race. By the way, anybody who says race is not a thing in this country should experience an adoption process where there are literally different lists.
Huh.
If you say that you want a white kid only versus if you say that doesn't matter.
Wow.
Like literally a different list.
What is that? What do you mean by that?
The list for a white kid only is longer.
Hmm.
And not only that, there was actually a discount, or you didn't have to pay a deposit on the fee.
Two for one.
This is like how it works. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. Mm. So we didn't know anything about the racial identity of the kids until they started to look mixed race, which they are. And like contending with like the hair thing is already like a thing. Mm. And like lots of advice, especially from like black parents who like see stuff on Instagram.
All right. So
me and Mayor Pete with something in common. We both have twins. Of course, I went about my twins differently than Pete did, but there you go.
They're adorable. So they're Penelope and Gus, little boy and little girl.
They named them Gus?
Yeah.
That's a violation.
Yeah, it's a violation.
It's an old guy name.
Yeah. Gus.
You can't be naming kids Gus.
Oh, my God. These kids are so cute.
So they got them at a discount.
Yeah.
You know, there's a discount.
I have never heard that.
No.
By the way, who says, can I just ask you a question? Yeah. Who fills out a thing that says whites only?
Well, I could see it being what's your preference? Do you want to adopt a white baby, a black baby, a mixed baby, Asian, Hispanic?
Who's going to look like you?
I could totally see that. It's no different than asking for a car, saying, "Hey, I need to have a midnight blue vehicle. I don't want black, red, or silver."
Is it because they're and I want to find a way to say this without being insensitive, but it's like it's an honest question. Like, is it the supply and demand issue with it? Like there's more black or Hispanic babies up for adoption than there are white babies? I don't know.
I mean, I would depend on the locale. I mean, I would imagine wherever Mayor Pete went, I mean, if this is South Bend, Indiana, that might differ from Miami, Florida, right? I mean, I can't imagine it's the 20-to-1 white to black ratio in every jurisdiction.
I don't know. I will tell you this, that I've heard and reported on the fact that sometimes adoption agencies are hesitant to put an ethnic child with white parents because there's, like they're saying, with hair culture,
yeah,
things of that nature. That's more of a story. And even there have been stories of foster kids. There was a famous one that was heart-wrenching here in Pennsylvania. And there was a child who had been in the foster care with a family who had other kids that they were biological kids. They'd been trying to adopt this little African-American boy for years. And they actually took him out of the home and put him with an African-American family. It was really heart-wrenching. And it was because of the race of the foster family. But yeah, it was the only family this child knew. So that's more the narrative that I tell you, I've never heard this. And I know a lot of people who've adopted kids.
Yeah.
I've never, that's the first time I've heard this about two different lists and there's a discount.
You think he's making it up?
I mean, I don't know what to say about it.
I wouldn't rule it out. I really would not rule that out. Yeah. These maniacs from this last administration are obsessed with identities.
Yeah.
You even heard it there from the guy next to Scholz asking the question. Well, I know how important identity is to you. Why is identity so important? I don't get it. Like, I concern myself more about my reputation than my identity. I'm a human being, but I care how people perceive me. Well, I really don't. But I'll just say that I do.
I will also say about the kids, I mean, the little boy for sure is blue-eyed. They're very light-skinned kids, and even they didn't know until they started to get older that they were mixed ethnicity.
Yeah.
But they're talking about the hair. That as well is, I mean, my son David, you guys have met, know David. David's hair is curlier than their hair. So to say that they, I don't know, that you're not braiding their hair properly or this or that, I'm calling BS on that too.
Okay.
I really think this is an effort to, like you're saying, fit a narrative. Mm-hmm. And I really hate that.
So do I.
Because he's like, you're pimping your beautiful children for this narrative. Stop. Yeah.
By the way, streaming live on YouTube, youtube.com/at1210 WPHG, only 119 likes right now. So I'm not liking that amount of likes. So I need everybody to stop what they're doing. Even if you're in traffic on 95, stop.
He's not liking the likes.
Get over to YouTube right now and please hit the like and subscribe buttons. Do that right now or you get nothing else. There's going to be dead air.
Dead air for the next hour and 50?
There's going to be a dead air for the next hour and 50 minutes. So get over there right now. Right now. I'm not kidding.
Do I get an early jump on the nap?
Like and subscribe right now. I'm not kidding, folk. I will punish you.
Uh-oh. Ooh.
Get over there
like
right now.
This. Is this Dark Stalker?
Dark Stalker. That's a hat.
Yeah.
Dark Stalker.
By the way, the PA Pyrotechnic fan has an interesting comment, and that's going to bring me to the next clip I'm going to play here. We talked a lot last week about the Austin Metcalf Carmelo Anthony story that is happening. Austin Metcalf, for those of you who don't know, was stabbed to death by Carmelo Anthony at a track meet. There were words exchanged. His lawyer and their lawyers are going back and forth. It's been a whole... This thing is playing out over the media, which I hate that it's doing. But apparently Austin Metcalf's family have gotten swatted three times in the past few days.
Mm-hmm. Keeps adding up.
Roll this.
They've responded to a third swatting call targeting Austin Metcalf's family. That's when someone calls in a false threat, trying to trigger a massive police response. Investigators say someone reported a shooting at Jeff Metcalf's house on Monday night. That's the second swatting call to Austin Metcalf's father. And it comes days after we learned someone placed a similar call to his mother Megan's home. Their son was stabbed to death 3 weeks ago at a track meet in Frisco.
It's funny you say this and you play that. That's the same anchor that delivered the first story of the swatting last Wednesday that we played on the cut sheet when Greg was on vacation. So now it's happened two more times. This is, I mean, and I didn't like it when he framed it the way he did the first time last week. And I still don't like the way he's framing it. They're making it sound like this is a prank phone call. This is not a prank phone call. I mean, ask Sean Farish. He can attest to this. One false step in a window on your front porch, and those officers trained to monitor your movement and then fire if they feel like they're in danger. And we're going to have people killed. This guy, by the way, Austin Metcalf's dad, who was also told to leave the press conference of the defense attorney on behalf of Carmelo Anthony's family, he was the first guy. I mean, his kid wasn't dead for 12 hours before he said he forgives Carmelo Anthony. This dad has got more forgiveness in his being than most of us could ever have. Now, the mom is still pissed off, rightfully so, but this dad has done nothing wrong. He's kicked out of a press conference, and now he's swatted three times.
Yeah.
As his son bled out in a set of bleachers.
Yep.
In his other son's arms.
Yeah, this whole thing is just the lawyers and, like, yeah, you mentioned his father being kicked out of a press conference. I mean, this whole thing is just is such a – the fact that it's playing out in the media like this is just – and the race issue is just so – it's just so tiresome. You know what I mean?
But have you seen it? Now, that's a local newscast, so I always try to separate that from, you know, the CNNs and the MSNBCs. Yeah. I haven't really seen a ton of outrage media coverage from the typical usual suspects in media trying to make this a race thing. Not saying that the defense attorney hasn't, or the mom, or anything like that. But I haven't seen the, I know she's out of a job, the Joy Reids of the world, and the typical race grifters on television, because this looks like a pretty much open and shut case, right?
Yeah.
Other than the, quote, argument again of self-defense, remember, the kid already admitted to killing him.
Mm-hmm.
So if there was more debatable elements to the crime, I think that drum would be banged a lot harder.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
I want to get your take on this, because one side of me is like all for this, and the other side of me is just like, I don't know. This is Cut 31, Phil. This happened in the Bronx yesterday. A group of Bronx vigilantes hunted down a suspect accused of attempting to rape a 70-year-old woman, and justice was served. Roll this.
Video of the man police had been looking for, seen here with no pants on, moments after he allegedly attempted to rape a 70-year-old woman near Creston Avenue and 184th Street around noon last Friday.
I have children and I have an older mother, so yeah, like, it's very disturbing to hear.
Word of the attack spread quickly through the Bronx.
You can't even come outside during the day. You have to have, like, four eyes behind you. On the side of you, that's really messed up what he did.
Less than 24 hours later, law enforcement sources tell News 4 an anonymous call came into police saying the suspect was detained by residents who delivered vigilante justice near Tybout Avenue and 187th Street.
Street
justice. The caller wrapped up by saying detectives could find their suspect in the hospital.
Yeah. I can't blame them.
I would have done the same thing. Because it could have been my grandmother, it could have been anybody, I would have done the same thing.
These women say they feel safer with this alleged predator off the street, no matter how he was taken off the street.
It's messed up because the government really don't do much about it. They'll lock him up now and let him go later.
Ah. There's too many people getting arrested and there's too many people getting out of jail.
Yeah.
Free-handed.
Yep.
I'm so happy they got him up out of here.
For Stendler Contreras, she says the catch-and-release system is wearing thin on the neighborhood, and with allegations of an attempted rape of a 70-year-old woman, people here are fed up.
He deserved what he got. I'm sorry.
Law enforcement sources tell us the suspect is not cooperating in helping police identify his attackers. We're also told detectives are working to see if he may be connected to other crimes in the area.
Now, that's the Bronx. I'm wondering if that's AOC's specific district. Would not surprise me if it was. I love this story. I love the fact that these people, I don't know if they saw it coming down the steps or they tracked him down hours or days later. But if I saw that occurring, obviously I would jump in. Or if I saw it occurring, it stops, and then the guy goes down the street. I'm all for that. You know, if the cops can't do the job because of DAs and politicians that have handcuffed them, let the citizens do it. More power to you. We need more Daniel Pennies out there.
He's ID'd as 50-year-old career criminal Oswaldo Ramos. 19 previous arrests.
Wow, 19.
Why was he out on the street?
Yep. Well, he had reportedly approached the victim, the 70-year-old lady, from behind at the location that you stated in Fordham Heights, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and had, you saw his pants off and tried to sexually assault her. And so these guys came after him. They beat the pulp out of him, were throwing rocks at him. And so he had required hospital treatment.
Yeah. The pulp. How do you like your orange juice, by the way? You like pulp in yours or no pulp?
This was not Pulp Fiction.
This is exactly what happens when you have district attorneys that don't prosecute crimes, yep, or that let people out. So,
you okay?
I just sneezed.
Oh.
We have three people on the show. And I'm just trying to see. There should never be silence.
No, I'm trying to see if Fordham Heights is AOC's district.
God bless you.
Thank you.
Wow, Fordham Heights, I'm correct. Fordham Heights is the 14th district of New York City. That is AOC's old district.
Shocking, right? I mean, look.
The face of the Democrat Party. AOC.
That is, I mean, yeah. Does it surprise you? Does it shock you?
No, it doesn't surprise me at all. Yeah. I mean, all of these citizens, they know about the catch and release. They know the no cash bail.
Yep.
They know that these individuals, I mean, 19, that's pennies compared to, who's the guy that we were talking about that had 47 priors?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to three strikes and you're out?
Yeah, 19. So the people, they're speaking to the media anonymously, these vigilantes, and they're saying, they're still threatening. They're saying, yeah, if this guy comes back, we're going to rock. They call it rocking him because they threw rocks at the guy and then they just beat him up.
Yep.
And so they said, you do this, zero tolerance.
Yep.
Gotham has their new Dark Knight.
Yeah.
By the way, and you know what's going to happen? The DA is going to spend all their resources tracking these people down and arresting them. That's what's going to happen.
Well, the funny thing is they must have covered the cameras or something because they're, some of the what they're reporting is there are no cameras.
Mm.
So either they got a hold of the cameras, damaged the, I don't mm-hmm. know how they
yep.
pulled that off, but there are no images.
Yeah. Yep. Well, Alvin Bragg is the DA for Manhattan, so that would not apply with, you know, the Bronx, obviously, but keep electing the Alvin Braggs of the world to be your district attorney. And this is what you get.
Well, you could call this next one. This is 14, Phil. You could call this next one either don't shop at Walmart or crime, because now a Walmart is locking up their steaks.
Okay. No more ribeye bandits.
First of all, people.
Now here we go.
Why are we buying steaks at Walmart?
Have you ever seen Walmart's butcher department? It's actually not bad.
Dude, come on. Come on.
A ribeye's a ribeye. You think there's any difference with a ribeye between Walmart and Giant?
Go in for a sweatshirt, come out with a ribeye. I mean, come on.
You think strip steaks are any different from Acme versus Walmart? What are these? Are these bougie cows? Elitist cows?
Well, everything in Walmart is cheap.
Yes.
And it comes from China. Well, so, like, where are these steaks coming from?
Well, Walmart also
not China.
Walmart can also afford to sell it for cheaper because they buy it in bigger quantity.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And remember that China and the rest of the world, China and the rest of the world will not take our beef or a lot of our poultry because of the things that the pesticides, the growth hormone, the antibiotics, like all that stuff. Because remember, poultry, we no longer do that stuff, but beef, the beef industry is too powerful. So they still, you know, load it full of stuff.
All right, here's locked up meat.
No more beef bandits.
Baby, this one you know is bad. When they put men in your gate so you don't steal, baby, they meats. Oh, girl, this got to be bad, Lord Jesus. Help our people, Lord.
They're like in one of those little metallic cages with the little plastic on it. It reminds me of like the certain apparel that you used to see back in the day in certain higher end stores and malls. Remember those little gel packets?
Yeah,
they still do that.
Do they still do that?
Yep.
Okay.
By the way, I'm getting ripped on the YouTube chat, and this is actually Walmart has good quality steaks.
I tried telling you that.
Better than other supermarkets.
Yeah.
Get off my YouTube!
Because like Nick said, they can buy in bulk.
Yeah.
And they sell so much.
Right. That's what I want.
By the way,
my beef in bulk.
Beef in bulk.
All right, so here's what we'll do, Dawn. We'll grab a strip steak from Walmart, and then we'll grab a strip steak from Whole Foods,
and we'll bring it in. We'll George Foreman that bad boy.
By the way, I don't shop at Whole Foods. You guys are putting labels on me that are just not true. I don't shop at Whole Foods.
Where do you get your steak from?
I'm Target.
Don't misbrand him.
I'm not telling you. Because of all the hate I'm getting right now on YouTube, I don't want people to show up.
Yeah, look, I'm all for going to a local butcher. If you want to go to Bob's Butcher on the corner and you know, have them wrap it up in the nice white white paper,
the wax paper.
Yeah, the wax paper. That's a great. I love that process. Very nostalgic.
This show is very popular now, so the odds are that I'm going to run into somebody that listens at said grocery store, and I just, you know, I put myself out here 5 days a week.
You're targeted.
I'm targeted. Just like these steaks are.
Yeah. Steaks. Do we know what locale that is?
No.
I'm going to guess New York, Atlanta, L.A., or Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
Odds are they're not locking those up in Biloxi, Mississippi.
So Trump yesterday signed an executive order to make it easier for teachers to discipline students. I don't know how we feel about this one.
Are we pulling out the rulers? Ruler across the knuckle?
This happened in the Oval Office yesterday with Lutnick and Linda McMahon around, standing around him. Roll this.
Sir, we have an executive order on school discipline policies. Under, I believe it was the Biden administration, first Obama and then Biden, the Department of Justice issued guidance that made it almost impossible for schools to enforce adequate disciplinary policies. This created issues in the classroom for teachers and students alike. Basically, they focused on CRT and sort of diversity ideology instead of actually just enforcing the rules in classrooms to ensure a safe learning environment. This executive order revokes that prior guidance and puts us back in a place where hopefully the Department of Education can focus on education and teachers can focus on teaching in a safe environment.
And this was important for you, Linda.
Yeah, absolutely, because it gives teachers the authority now to have discipline in their classroom and discipline the person who is being disruptive. We took that away.
Okay, so my question would be, what's the mode of discipline here? Are we talking physical discipline? I can't imagine
I'm okay with that.
That we are. No, see, I'm not. No.
What?
No, the state is not educating and running my child's life. Whether it's queer books at 4 in a library or Mr. Johnson in the 5th grade gripping up my... No, obviously, I would never want it to happen to my daughter. You would think you're probably more for it as a dad if you have boys. I don't want a teacher putting his hands on or her hands on my child.
I got to tell you, if one of my teachers would have taken a textbook and smacked me across the face with it, maybe I would have been such a pain in the ass.
No, they're not.
Wow.
That's not what they're doing, though. It's discipline.
Right, but what does that mean? I mean, I've seen all these awful classroom videos on social media where the teacher just sits there and watches two kids beat the hell out of each other. Is that what they're referring to?
Do they want to get involved if they think that they're, you know, they're in danger because, you know, these two animals can't control themselves?
That's my main point. If I'm a teacher in today's age, especially, you know, 8th or 9th grade above with boys that have hit puberty already, I'm not stepping in and breaking that up unless I know I physically can get it under control. If there's any doubt that I'll be overwhelmed because it's 2-on-1 or both guys are, you know, 6'1", 215. I mean, I'm calling, you know, every class has a phone, right? Or some sort of communication method to reach the principal's office, the guidance counselor's office, school security, school police. Yeah, but it would have to be a really detailed situation for me to justify a teacher putting their hands on my kid.
So Peter S. says suspension. Like, suspension doesn't work. Like, you get days off.
Right.
Like,
out of school suspension was something I seeked.
Yeah. I was hoping.
I'd stay home and watch Springer and SportsCenter.
I was hoping to get it out of school suspension.
Now, in-school suspension
that's
was
worse.
Brutal.
Yeah, because you have to sit there.
The first thing that from WhiteHouse.gov, the federal government will no longer tolerate known risks to children's safety and well-being in the classroom, which result from the application of school discipline based on discriminatory and unlawful equity ideology. You know, part of this, think of what happened locally with a little girl in school, in the school cafeteria. Another student who's just been transferred to her school comes up, runs up behind her. She had no way of defending herself with a large metal object that happened to be a Stanley Cup. This was a stainless steel object, slammed her head. The kid, you know, needed all these stitches and staples in her scalp. And then they later learned that that individual was alleged to be a known risk.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Penn Ridge, the local, you know, story that we've covered. And so I think that that maybe what they're trying to do is say we have to look at, first of all, empower the local school officials, the teachers. Because remember, in that same story, there were individuals who were like special ed teachers who were scared of that student.
Oh, well,
who've been transferred from school to school to school.
Remember the one that we covered from Florida with the cut sheet? The teacher took the kid's Nintendo Game Boy
or
Nintendo Switch.
Oh, yes.
And then we played the video. Remember, he ran down the hall after her behind her and then whipped her to the ground.
Yeah.
And then she got disciplined, right? Wasn't she prosecuted or fired?
I think you're right.
Yeah.
And then she came back. I mean, she suffered you know, brain damage, basically concussion.
Yes.
All of that. But they were mad at her that she spoke out because she wanted him to be criminally charged.
Right.
And so that's what cost her her job.
I think the underlying theme here is this is more of a PR move by the Trump administration saying, in the school environment, we will empower those in power and no longer empower those who are bad actors. The kids that have all the issues that are known badasses, your days of getting away with everything are over.
Yeah.
That's what that really comes down to for me.
And I forget the ethnic breakdown in that Florida story, but I think it was a white or light-skinned
It was a white or a Latino teacher and a black kid.
And so...
And he was big. He was like 6'3", 280. Yeah.
Had nothing to do with his ethnicity.
Yeah, he looked like a left tackle.
But in the executive order, what they're writing about is that in the past... So what this says in the executive order is they want race-neutral disciplinary policies.
Sure.
In other words, much like the Florida case, that was perfect that you named that, Nick, because the teacher felt that because it didn't fit a narrative or because they didn't want to expose that the kid happened to be a different race than her, which had nothing to do with it.
Of course not.
But in those cases, they want to, you know, just shove them under the rug and they don't want the teacher to prosecute or anything of that nature. So this is trying to make it race neutral discipline.
If the facts are the same, the punishment should be the same. Regardless of male, female, black, white.
We should, I need to stay on track because of our guests in the 9 o'clock hour, so we should take a break here. But on the other side, I have a ton more. Trump went off on changing team mascot names. Both the Chiefs and the that team in Massapequa.
Spartans.
Comedian Nikki Glaser is afraid of telling Trump jokes on stage because she's afraid she's going to be put on a list if she does
that.
She's
so funny.
So I got to rip Nikki Glaser and then defend Bowen Yang.
And more from the Supreme Court hearings about that LGBTQ book situation happening in school. So we'll get to all that on the other side.
All right, Kale and Company as we continue. But first, a word from our friends at Natural Lawn of America. Because when you're choosing a lawn care service, and it's late April, but you could still do that if you'd like, it makes sense to hire a company that provides better results that is also safer for your family and your pets. That's why I chose Natural Lawn of America, because they believe in growing greener, healthier lawns without the harsh chemicals. From organic fertilizers to safer weed and insect controls, they make sure that your lawn will thrive naturally, season after season. You can join the growing number of homeowners that are switching to Natural Lawn safer services and start enjoying that beautiful, eco-friendly lawn that you can be proud of. Schedule Natural Lawn's full-service program today, and you'll get free seeding every year. If you want a greener, healthier lawn plus free seeding every year, here's what you do. You call Natural Lawn today, 800-FREE-SEED. That's 800-FREE-SEED. Your lawn deserves the best, so call the best. Choose my lawn care company, the locally owned and operated Natural Lawn of America. Greener grass, fewer weeds, guaranteed.
It's Kale and Company on demand from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD and the free Odyssey app.
The paying back of student loans. So this guy took to TikTok yesterday and said that he's not paying back his student loans. And in fact, he blamed everyone in the world except himself, who took the loan out, for why he has said student loans. This is the epitome, in my opinion, of like the, well, I don't want to pay this back. I know I did it, but I don't care. The consequences. And it's because I can't, I don't have a job that's gonna pay me the right amount of money and blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
Roll this.
I'm not paying back my student loans. I do not care. Oh, but what about your credit score? What am I going to do with a good credit score? Buy a house on starvation wages? Buy a car I can't afford to insure? I'm not paying them back. I don't give a shit about my credit score.
Can I stop it for 1 second? First of all, the time it took him to make this 90-second video, he could have been out working. He could have been doing something else. Instead, he's laying on his couch and his wife beat her. And he's bitching into his phone.
Yep, I agree.
It's with his perfectly manicured eyebrows.
Yeah, exactly.
They're waxed.
Yes. Just the level of narcissism. The level of narcissism this takes.
Yep.
To sit and be like, I'm not paying this back.
Right.
I'm not paying this back.
Right.
Dig a ditch, homie.
And then jump in and have somebody fill it up for you.
All right, Phil, can we start it over? Because there's no way we're going to be able to line that back up again. Go.
I'm not paying back my student loans. I do not care. Oh, but what about your credit score? What am I going to do with a good credit score? Buy a house on starvation wages? Buy a car I can't afford to insure?
Starvation wages?
I'm not paying them back. I don't give a shit about my credit score. Oh, they're going to garnish your wages. Most of us are underemployed. If they start taking additional money out of my paycheck, I just won't work. My life will not get worse. I'm not going to have the money anyway, so you can't garnish what isn't there. I grew up in a far-right, conservative, hardcore Republican family.
Here we go.
And since, like, kindergarten,
they're ashamed of you.
I have been conditioned to believe that if I did not go to college, I would not be successful. I was told that if I locked in, got great grades in high school, got into college, focused, and got my degree, that I would have a life similar to the life my parents had, where my dad worked one job for, like, 35 years, was able to buy a house and go on vacation and support his family. That doesn't exist anymore. There's no jobs out there with pension plans. There's no jobs out there that let people my age just, like, buy a house. So what was all that work for? Generations of Americans have been told that if they went to college and they did the right thing, took out these loans, that it would be worth it.
Most
of us are finding out it's not even remotely close to worth it. You're telling me these millionaires and billionaires were able to get these PPE loans forgiven that they took out during the pandemic for millions of dollars, but I have 30 grand in college debt left and I'm refusing to pay it back and now I'm the problem?
Okay, I'm actually going to defend a portion of what he's saying there. The PPE loan is nonsense. The fact that Tom Brady was able to take out a PPE loan and then not have to pay it back, completely outrageous. Also, college, yes, overrated. Now, pay your loan back, you leech. But also, here's where I would criticize, instead of just dunking on him with stupid commentary, I'll actually give you a well-thought-out one this time. I'm capable of that from time to time on this show.
Capable.
Here's the thing. What did you major in? What school did you go to? I got news for you. If you're going to the University of Penn to get a marketing degree, you're a freaking moron. If you're going to... I can't say that word? I'm sorry. All right. I thought I could. That's my fault. Seriously, if you're going to go into, like, radio or broadcasting, and I'm not talking about journalism. Like, if you want a really good journalism degree, Minnesota, like Dawn went to, Northwestern, Medill School of Journalism, if you want a certain broadcast, if you have aspirations of, like, big-time television, you know, as, like, a ESPN commentator or Fox News, Syracuse, right? Newhouse, very good school. Fordham, Hofstra, there's some really good schools. But some of these people that take out these loans for these entry-level degrees, communications, marketing, criminal justice. I have a criminal justice degree. That's why I went to Temple. There was no way I was going to go to college for criminal justice and pay $68,000 a year in undergrad school. Community college. I'm going to tell my daughters right off the bat, because I think one of my daughters is going to go to school probably for nursing or medicine. I can already just tell. She loves to help everybody. And then my other daughter, Mia, she's obsessed with media. If she ever wants to go into, like, music, radio, or any sort of broadcasting, I'm going to send her 7 blocks from my house for the first 2 years to Montgomery Community College and tell her to just get your basic credits out of the way and save a ton of money. So I would love to have the context of what that guy chose and what he majored in and what he had to pay. I think he said 30 grand there, which, okay, But if you're making decent money, you should be able to pay 30 grand back. Again, yeah. I go back to what I said yesterday. Student loans are like one of the most forgiving things. You can pause those bad boys so many different times. And the interest rate, even though it's higher than what I paid 20 years ago, it's still in the single-digit percentages, right? We talk about Trump wanting to cap credit card interests at 10% with these big banks. You're paying under 10% for a student loan. That's not terrible. It's not like paying 32% for a Kohl's card.
YouTube.com/at1210WPHT. If you're listening to 1210WPHT, you didn't hear that because Nick dropped a curse word.
Yeah,
but if you're watching, in what world do you think you can say dip S on the radio?
I was channeling my inner Bowen Yang from SNL, who's all sick of the FCC and censorship.
I forgive you this time. Yeah. But if you're watching on YouTube or listening on the Odyssey app, which, by the way, you should be, you hear all of this uncensored. So it's only the people on 1210 WPHD who aren't hearing the salty language that my colleagues drop because they forget they're on radio.
Should we do like a bonus Kale and Company uncut where we just, you know, do a show one day after the show? Like, I don't know, I'll stick around.
Dawn does a show every day.
We'll do it from like noon to noon to 12:30 where we just curse.
The Dom show?
Yeah.
We'll
do it like on Social Lonely where we just go fully uncensored.
Yeah, I know.
Hot seller.
Shafe is like, we love cursing. That's exactly why you should go to YouTube and the Odyssey app, because you get to hear it. Because my colleagues forget that they're on radio and they say things that they shouldn't. But thank God I'm here to protect the license of the
FCC. Thank God you weren't on vacation.
Nikki Glaser was at the Trump or the Time 100. I said Trump. The Time 100 gala. And she's talking about, so she did a comedy in Toronto. She did a stand-up show in Toronto. She talked about doing stand-up sets and talking about Trump, you know, mocking Trump, which is you can do whatever you want to.
And for context, too, she was the one that roasted Brady at the Netflix special, right?
Yes.
Okay.
She's hysterically funny.
I like her.
She's on the left. She's on the left. Mm-hmm. But she tells a story here that I'm calling BS on.
Oh.
See, I say BS, not the actual word, unlike Kale. she's afraid that if she talks bad about Trump, she's going to be put on a list. Roll this.
The list.
Like, there was a time on stage, I think, on Saturday night that I was like, oh my God, if what I said gets recorded and sent out, like, I could maybe not get let back into the country. Like, literally, I had a friend, Jenna Friedman, who just posted on Instagram, comedian, that she was performing in Vancouver, and when she came back to America, in customs asked, what do you do? She said she's a comedian. They said, do you talk about politics in your set, and do you make fun of the president? And she said she answered truthfully, which I think is yes for her. And they didn't, like, take her to, they let her go, but they asked.
Stop it.
Yes.
There's zero chance that happened.
No shot.
There's zero chance.
As an American citizen?
That a Customs and Border Patrol agent said, do you make jokes about the president?
Bull.
There's no chance that happened.
No, none.
And she's an idiot for falling for it.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, when you go through, I mean, I just went through it coming back through you know, Milan, to, right, with conservative tourists for our trip. So nowadays, first of all, you can, you know, your passport, all they're waving you through. There are people in gloves and they're waving. Do you have anything to declare?
Yeah.
And you put your passport on the thing and they're like, move.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's asking you.
It's ridiculous.
That's crazy.
It's a ridiculous, ridiculous statement.
Now, it'd be one thing if she was in comedy mode and she was telling a joke. But that seems like she's trying to tell you and sell you on an authentic story, which, to your point, is total BS.
She said she heard from her friend on Instagram, so it had to be true.
Oh,
she's
wow.
a dope who believes she sees like everything she sees on the internet.
Well, exactly.
Everything needs to be on Twitter. Gern Blance has said, curse words and company. I like that.
Yeah.
Keep rolling.
And that just is, I mean, I'm not trying to be an alarmist, but I don't think that I am immune to having some kind of backlash, or that I couldn't be put on some kind of list because of some story I reposted that was, I mean, you look at other places that have dictators. Like, you're not allowed to say bad things about them past, before they became a dictator or after. So I'm kind of on a list at this point, probably. But he's so hot that I think that I'll have that. Like, I stand by that. Like, I may disagree with his policy, but I'm so sexually attracted to him. And I don't know laughing. I'm 100% real about
it. Right, yeah, 100% fake.
She's funny.
Yeah, she she's
lying.
Very
there.
Good.
She's
yeah,
lying there.
That's totally a BS story.
She's fear-mongering
yeah.
with a whole, I might be put on a list.
What, Jericho's list? I mean, come on. Audience of one.
Nobody knows what that means.
So, as far as comedians go, let
it's
me just
a Bible reference from his Bible study.
That's right, yes. Book of Jericho. So, Bo and Yang. How about this? I think we'll all agree on this. Maybe not, but Bo and Yang rants about SNL censorship, saying this is the real world. So, Bo and Yang. I don't really find him funny, but then again, I don't find much of SNL these days funny. But he says he wants to be able to say the S word and the F word on Saturday Night Live.
I agree.
He says, quote, we are so hampered in our comedy at SNL by not being able to say S and F, Yang said,
yep.
on the latest episode of the Las Culturistas podcast featuring former cast member Amy Poehler, who was funny. Quote, let us say S and F, like it's about us, it's Abbott, it's Ghosts, he said of another network show that have allowed traditional standards and practices to be ditched. He said, we should be able to say the S word and the F word at least five times per season on SNL. Cory Booker out here with the filibuster shoot. I've had my fill of busters, said a joker that was on one of these episodes as well. I guess they were spoofing Cory Booker for the whole 25-hour thing. Bo and Yang goes on to say, as he opined, that FCC rules about on-air profanity mean that the kind of great comedic moments are harder to come by. You can give SNL an exception or an exemption, he went on to say, quote, if we're dismantling the FCC because of Donald Trump, can we at least, can one, Boone, can one silver lining be that we get to say the S word and the F word?
I agree. I agree with it because, you know what, the landscape has changed and the radio and all of the stuff, like, we're not just competing, you know, we're not competing right now at 8:50 in the morning with WMMR or WIP. We're competing with everything. You know what I mean? Like, we're competing with podcasts. We're competing with all this stuff.
We're competing for attention spans.
And 100%. And we are, you know, we are hampered by the fact that we, you know, we have to abide by these stupid FCC rules.
It's so archaic.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like yes, this, you know, I know we joke about your daughter listening, but like this show, the content of it, not because of what we say, but just the subject matter is not for kids because a lot of kids don't know what's going on. So who are we really shielding curse words from?
Well, most adults don't know what's going on. Most adults don't even know about Kilmar Abrego Garcia, for God's sake.
That's so what I mean.
Why exactly do we have to cater to such a, and look, I get it. There are some people in this audience that are, you know, very religious, the evangelical Christian base. They don't like curse words. I get it. And I'm not saying that we should be able to curse nonstop, nor am I saying we should have a five curse limit like Bo and Yang. But when one slips out because you're fired up in a passionate moment, like I was about the guy who wouldn't repay his loan, that shouldn't be a moment where a stalker has to dive for the dump button like Bryson Stott trying to turn a double play. You know, I mean, my God. It's not like we haven't heard words like DS before, and I'm not saying you have to get all raunchy, but, you know, when it's in an authentic moment,
agreed,
it should be permitted.
Agreed.
Right?
I agree. And I'm not saying I would, even if we had free reign here, I would never turn any show on the station into just, like, curse every other word, even though I do that in my personal life, because I don't think it's appropriate. But you're right. One slips out every now and then because you're passionate about something, like, what's the problem? It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's such an archaic rule that, like, ooh, we have to shield people's ears from okay.
Yeah.
People hear curse words all the time. It's not 1955 anymore.
Yeah, he went on, they say, while he doesn't believe the show needs to be riddled with profanities, Yang suggested a preset allotment for how many curse words can fly each year. He says, quote, it would bring a sketch to the next level. It would make it so that you would be able to know, oh, this is the real world, not this heightened sketch reality. Amy Poehler said she had a slightly different take. I do think there's something fun about not being able to say it because it causes comedic tension. The air may be let out of that balloon when you do, she explained, because, quote, you want it, but you can't have it.
We should. I'm sure Dawn disagrees with the fact that we should be able to curse on radio.
Well, Dawn's let a few slip from time to time.
She has. She had one of the biggest offenses.
The same one of yours.
She I had the, one yours, of the biggest offenses ever on this radio.
Yours
I
was
did
better.
The past tense of Twitter.
Yes.
That's all.
You had the greatest one of all time. I wish I would have done that. If I would have done that, there might have been repercussions. But you get away with it.
But Look, I think that you think of somebody like Dana Carvey, since you're talking about comedians, and you think about the fact the guy never curses. He makes up words. He's so funny and creative. And so part of it is I'm kind of glad that people, you know, don't curse, because actually the conversation and their language becomes more descriptive.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, from a point of listening, that sometimes on these podcasts where people, every other word is a lazy curse word. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Lazy. I love that. Lazy curse word.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
You are correct.
Yeah. And if you can articulate your point without a curse, that's great. Also, I think if all of a sudden you start to change up your vernacular, people realize that you're doing it for effect and you're a fraud.
Sure,
but when it flies, you know, in the heat of passion, you know, I'm assuming the YouTube chat loved my curse word, because I was fired up about that dope that doesn't believe he should have to pay his loans back.
Yeah.
Speaking of loans, let's go to Karen. Karen is next on Talk Radio 1210. Hello, Karen.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I wanted to, the student loan topic is near and dear to my heart. So my daughter went to college in North Carolina. We live in New Jersey, so she's out of state. So it was a lot more expensive.
Okay.
She went for initially physical therapy, ended up with, changed it to recreational therapy. She ended up going 5.5 years, because here's a tip. Don't get divorced while your kids are in college. It derailed her completely.
Okay.
So
now, let me ask you this, Karen, real quick. What school in North Carolina? Chapel Hill?
East Carolina.
East Carolina University.
ECU.
Yep.
Yep.
The Pirates.
Pirates. So she went 5.5 years, went through summer school. She was just determined to get a degree. Ended up with, because she failed out and she tried, she got back, but they accepted her only for a degree in university studies. What can you do with that? Nothing.
Nothing. You can flush it down the toilet.
So $218,000 later, that's how much debt she was in, student loan debt.
For a four-year degree?
She had, for a four-year degree, it took her 5.5 years, university studies, $200,000 in debt, $218,000 in debt. So what can you do with that? So she joined the military. Got a reduction of her interest rates on her student loans, put a few in deferment. She just got through it. She was able to get VA loans for house to buy two houses. So she ended up buying two houses, got in the military. Now she's getting ready to sell both of the houses and pay off her student loan debt with the sale of the two houses.
It's very sad.
So she
savvy
was
move
able to do this. But I told her, I said, we sign these papers every year. We have to pay this debt back.
Yes. Yeah, it's
so
called a master,
I, you know,
yeah, it's a master promissory note. Well, let me ask you this. When she joined the military, that $218,000, what did that get reduced to based on the military discount, so to speak?
It doesn't get reduced. They only reduce the interest on your loans.
Okay.
Exactly. So you can put them in deferment. They reduce the interest on the loans.
Got it.
If she's in the military for 10 years, I believe there's some kind of forgiveness. I can't remember what it is. But so now she still has $140,000. She's selling these two houses and paying off her student loans. And now she also has a master's in terrorism and counterterrorism, and a degree, and also a master's in cybersecurity that the government paid for because she's in the military.
Those sound like degrees that are worth pursuing, especially in this day and age. Yeah.
Yeah. So now she's in the Navy. She's getting ready to be transferred to Japan for 3 years, and she is killing it. But you've got to hang in there. And she had the support of her dad and I. The three of us helped her pay, you know, our thirds, you know, each.
Right.
But we sign those papers, and you got to pay them back.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a little bit excited when I heard Biden was going to start forgiving some loans. I was like, ooh, you know, that works in our favor.
Yep.
But you know what? We got to pay them back. And so she did what she needs to do. and the girl's tough, and she found a way, you know, found a way to do it, and I'm so proud of her. So,
is it hard on a marriage when, you know, you're an empty nester? Did that cause the divorce?
No.
You have to face each other? Like, I'm facing this Karen in a year.
She's asking for a friend.
I know, I'm asking for a friend.
She's asking for a friend, Karen.
It was difficult working together because with him to help her finish college and get him to sign his part of these notes and everything, these promissory notes. So it was difficult. It was difficult saying, hey, you know, I need your loan money this month. You know what? But we worked through it, and she was the focus, and we put our differences aside to make sure she got what she needed to get an education and to keep her on track to get these paid off.
There you go. Karen, thank you very much.
Thanks, Karen.
Geez, $218,000 to be a physical therapist. I'm not sure what physical therapist makes, but $218K is a lot of money.
Start your day with Kale and Company. Weekday mornings 6 till 10 on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and the free Odyssey app.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.